I'm Sam Burnett. I'm one of the designers and maintainers of Bismarck, which is a worldwide deployment of home routers for collecting measurements and deploying applications in home networks. Today I'm going to tell you a bit about some experiences that we've had and some lessons that we learned in building and deploying Bismarck over the past 4 years. This is work that I've done with Srikanth, with Nick Walter, and many, many, many other people whose names would not even fit on the slide. Why is this not? Okay, there we go. Okay, so so the internet is definitely coming home. Over 2/3 of households in the US have access to broadband, and over 1/3 of households now worldwide have used the internet at home. Increasingly, we're seeing a proliferation of devices, new devices, in homes, changing the way, the dynamics, and the variety of devices inside of homes. This is, you know, the so-called Internet of Things that you may have read about recently. And this is going to make studying home networks potentially much more interesting in the years to come. So what are some of the types of research questions which we might want to answer when looking at home networks? One is, what is the performance of my home network? Am I receiving, or of my ISP that connects my home network to the internet? Another is, do people use home networks differently in different parts of the world? So for example, if you have an ISP that uses data caps, do you change your behavior? If power is a very expensive resource in the part of the world where you live, do you change how you use home networks? And third is, can we improve how we troubleshoot these networks? So ISP support costs are notoriously high for home networks because they have to go to people's homes or talk on the phone with them. And is there anything that we can do to bring those costs down? So these are some of the types of problems that we might want to try to answer. But answering these is quite difficult, and it's because of a lot of practical reasons. One is that houses, home networks are behind a NAT. This is a well-known problem, but it makes studying them from remote locations, so as researchers from a university, makes studying home networks very difficult because they're very opaque. Second is that they're largely unmanaged and completely unorganized. So people build their own, they plug in their own equipment, there's no central management authority, there's no central place you can go to get information about these networks. And finally, there are real people involved. So people actually have to use these things on a day-to-day basis. You can't go in and just tear them apart and do what you wish. And these are the main things we found that make studying these networks very difficult. So when we started this project back in 2010, we wanted to look at are ISPs selling, are home users getting the performance that ISPs are selling them? And so this may seem like a relatively easy question to answer. You have sites like this you might have used called Speedtest. Speedtest.net is one. There's many others. And you go there, you click a button, and it tells you, oh, hey, your internet connection has, you know, X megabits per second. But we soon found, you know, there's a lot of problems with this. One is, can you actually trust this data? What if, you know, guy in the next room is watching a movie at the same time that you run this measurement? Second is, is the performance consistent across time? So I click this button once and I run the measurement. Does that tell me anything about how my network is going to perform next week? And third, does this account for wireless performance at all? So, or more broadly, doesn't really tell you why you might be seeing the number you're getting. Is it because of a wireless pathology, or is it because of your upstream provider? It just gives you a number, and you have to sort of infer what's going on. So our approach to drilling down on this problem at the time was to modify a home router. And the reason for this is because the home router sits in the middle of the home network. So you have your home network, you have the internet, and all of the devices connect to the router to do pretty much anything on the network that they want to do, including accessing the internet and accessing each other. So this is kind of an ideal place to study these sorts of questions because we have much more control over what's going on, much more visibility. And what we did is we built a custom software. We put custom software on routers. We call these Bismarck routers. And they're just commodity Netgear routers. We support three different models with OpenWrt firmware. OpenWrt is just a embedded Linux distribution. And the thing to note here is that they're actually pretty, they're not very powerful machines. Most notably, they only have 16 megs of flash storage. So this kind of limits the types of things that we can do, but we're still able to get a surprising amount of mileage out of them. So once we modify these routers, there are sort of three categories of problems that we look at. One is using the router as a sort of traditional internet network vantage point, so exploring outwards into the internet. We did a project with performance, as I mentioned, but we are also looking at what destinations are accessible. So if you're in a country that censors access to the internet, can we detect that from a Bismarck router? The sort of second phase is looking at inward into the home and seeing what types of devices do people use, how do they use them. And we had a study last year looking at the diversity and usage of devices and how that varies around the world. And finally, looking at how traffic and how usage flows through the router. So if we wanted to look and identify whether or not where bottlenecks, for example, are. If we wanted to know, is my connection slow because it's a wireless problem or it's because of my upstream ISP, this fits into this category. So we've deployed almost 200 of these, almost 200 of these are currently online in almost 30 countries around the world. Generally speaking, when we want to tackle a problem and use this testbed to answer some research problem, we follow several steps. So first is that we write some software. So we have a research problem we want to address. Maybe we write some measurement software to try to collect data. Second is that we need to make that software work on the router. I mentioned that the routers are quite underpowered. They don't run an Intel chipset, so you have to make a bunch of modifications. After you do that, you have to actually deploy the routers in people's homes. You have to find people and you have to put the routers in the homes and get them running. And finally, you have to repeat this process because there's no point in putting one piece of measurement software on a $120 router and mailing it to someone and that being the end of a story. You want to be able to repeat this process, collect new data, run new measurements. So in this talk, I'm mostly going to talk about sort of the fun practical issues involved with actually getting these routers into people's homes. The paper goes a lot more into detail on the other two aspects here, which are, you know, how do you get the software to run, how do you update it, how do you maintain these routers online. Hopefully I've convinced you that home networks are an interesting problem so far, and that our approach of looking from the middle of the network at the home router is a reasonable way of doing it. As I said, I'm going to go through a few practical lessons that we've learned, and then conclude with ways in which you may want to help with this project. So the first lesson that we learned was that people are actually really suspicious of custom hardware. So for the first few months of this project, we actually deployed these custom-built boxes called Knox boxes. We actually had to buy parts and assemble them ourselves. And they're nice because they run vanilla Debian Linux, so they're really easy to program. But we found that it was actually really difficult to convince people to put this in their living room. Just getting them to plug it in was a chore. This is for a few reasons. There's no familiar branding logo on the front. There aren't any labels on the ports on the back. You kind of have to guess what to do. It's made out of metal instead of plastic. There aren't any blinking lights on the front. So it really doesn't look like a regular home router. And this was a huge stumbling block for people. So if you contrast this to the thing that we now deploy, which is the Netgear routers, these are, you know, commodity routers. We don't modify the hardware at all. And these are much more difficult to program. They have a number of difficulties with them, but we went in this direction because of this. We learned this lesson the hard way, that deploying custom hardware is actually a really hard problem. That being said, once you get the person to plug it into their internet connection at home and use it, they are still very, very suspicious of the thing. they'll blame the Bismarck router at the first sign of trouble. It could be that their Windows laptop starts crashing. They'll be like, it's the Bismarck router. And they'll either call us, hopefully, but most of the times they'll just unplug it. So this sort of leads into the second question, which is that having hardware like this on the critical path has both pros and cons. Helps us and it hurts us. So just a reminder that the router is in the central, it's in the middle of the network, as I said before. And sort of the advantages of having it in this location are that it's a really ideal vantage point for collecting lots of different types of data and solving these, addressing these research questions that I talked about before. And it also gives us sort of free monitoring, that the person is using the router, so if something goes wrong with it, they'll notice, and hopefully all it'll require them to do is reboot it and plug it back in. Hopefully that's all that happens. But in those cases, actually, it's beneficial to us. But the disadvantages are, first, that when you have something on the critical path that all the traffic is going through, people become very wary of privacy, rightly so. And you know, in the cases where we actually do want to do experiments that might look at users' traffic, we definitely have to go through this whole approval process, which can be quite long, but you know, it's very necessary. And second of all, that users are not very tolerant to failure. Most of the times, what happens when something goes wrong is they just unplug the router. So you know, we've collected statistics about these routers, you know, how long people keep them plugged in. Of the routers that we've shipped, about 50% of them are now offline over the past 4 years. And a lot of times people will unplug them within the first 3 months. And sometimes we'll mail them to people and they won't even plug them in at all. We don't really know what's happening there, if people are like selling them on eBay or what. But it is important to note, though, that the FCC has done a larger scale study using much more limited home, less powerful routers, not customizable, but they've done a similar study, and their numbers actually match this. They about 50% of their routers also go offline, so we're not too off base here. And secondly, we're looking at ways to counteract this problem, and that is to provide incentives for people to actually want to use the router. So we've built services that let people, for example, explore the data that we collect, the performance data we collect, and give it back to them so that they can see, oh, you know, why was, you know, was my network actually slow last Wednesday, or was I just imagining it? And tools for helping people manage if they have a capped internet connection, helping them manage the cap and distributing the cap between their devices. And we've actually had people use these tools, and they'll actually complain to us when they don't work, which sort of indicates that they find them useful and want them. So, and third quick lesson here is that the deployment model of how we find people and deploy the routers actually matters a lot. So there are sort of four deployment models which should be followed. One is we offer our firmware for free on the web. You can go download it if you have a supported router. Second is, you know, we've given this to friends and friends of friends. This is how we deployed the first 100 routers or so. The third is that we have sort of a franchise model where if you're a researcher and you want to do research using Bismarck, we'll let you do it. But sometimes we'll ask you, oh, hey, can you just take these 10 or 20 routers and find people to use them yourself? And this is particularly useful in international deployments. We actually have deployments in the UK, in Pakistan, South Africa, and soon in Tunisia. They're all driven using this model. And finally, we're currently doing a pilot with Comcast, who's going to actually be deploying these with real Comcast customers, putting Bismarck on routers that they give to real customers. So the thing here is that the trust that you build with the person hosting the router and whether you trust them and they trust you is really what influences this. So you know, as you go down the list here, you build more and more trust. And you know, the franchise model, for example, is the model we've been using a lot lately, and it's really good because we delegate trust out to people, and there's always a link in the chain of very high trust. So just quick words on how you can help the project. If you want to put a Bismarck router in your home, you know, we already have several hundred, but we can always use more. If you have a supported router already, you can flash it yourself. Otherwise, we can mail you one for free. You just please keep it plugged in. Second of all, if you're interested in using the platform for your own research, We are completely open source, and we provide as much open data as we can. Obviously, you know, if we're collecting personal information, we can't provide that, but the data that we do have available is online. And especially if you're willing to host a deployment in yourself, you know, near your university or something like that, we're very interested in talking with you. So in conclusion, I've talked about Bismarck, which is our platform for our testbed for deploying measurements and applications in home networks. And we really hope that you'll find it interesting and might want to use it for your own work. Finally, this definitely wouldn't be complete without acknowledging the many, many people who have helped this project along the way. This is actually still an incomplete list of people who really need to be thanked here. So, and finally, of course, we need to thank the people who host these things in their homes. You know, obviously, this wouldn't be possible without you. You know, the people who keep them on, anyways. So, thank you very much.
Very interesting, and thanks for acknowledging the Comcast thing, which is up and coming, I know. We're not all totally evil. some of them, not me. I should stop going down that road, shouldn't I? My question is sort of about, you sort of talked at the beginning about, you know, how if you can be in the router, it gives you sort of visibility into the network and outwards as well, but you could obviously achieve a subset of that by being sort of like a wart inside the router, for example, right? So you could do some sort of path monitoring through the NAT. You could get some sort of visibility into what's attached. You know, there are apps on my phone like Thing that will tell me what's... So have you considered... And that would obviously have fewer trust barriers because it's no longer the default router, right? But it would give you some monitoring. Have you?
So you're just talking about a client device.
Yeah, I'm just telling them, like, you know, like just send someone a $50 box that doesn't route, but
so,
just
so people
like,
have done this. If you're familiar with the RIPE Atlas probe, I mean, that's a very limited example, obviously.
Sure.
I think that for a lot of the types of work, so you are correct that would work in some situations. And we have thought about it, actually, because of this, the boxes are so expensive and stuff. But there definitely are classes of problems which we really want to be able to tackle with, for example, with bottleneck detection and stuff like that, that really just aren't possible if you're not running the traffic through. So, but that is definitely a very good point, and we are thinking of that.
Okay. So. Thanks.
So just a quick question about so you listed the ways that you can give out these routers to people, and you know, you have different levels of trust. But I'm wondering if you're worried about levels of sampling bias in the way that's done, because it seemed in all of those it was computer users, you know, people that like computers, friends of people that like computers, friends of friends of people that like computers, and the ISPs that we're testing.
Yes. So the second one is a little bit easier, the ISPs tested, and we kind of deliberately, like, for example, we now have lots of people who use Comcast in Atlanta. So we really don't need any more people. If people who use Comcast in Atlanta come to us, we're like, no, you can't have a free router. With regards to the sampling bias of the actual human population, that is definitely a problem. Or I wouldn't say it's necessarily a problem for a lot of cases, because a lot of times we're just looking at, say, performance, where it doesn't really matter. But if we are looking at, like, human behavior, it is definitely something we have to acknowledge. So when we had a IMC paper last year, when we talked about this, how people use, we had to put very strong caveats on, okay, this is only true for this particular population. You have to be very clear about what the population is. Because of the whole trust issue, it really is difficult to iron that out. We can't just, I mean, we have a spreadsheet with like tens of thousands of volunteers who are willing to get these things, but, you know, are they just going to sell them on eBay when we mail them to them? Probably. So we're probably not going to go that way. But that is definitely a very good point.
Okay, thanks.